This is it could be Stonehenge. No, it's Drenthe.
It's
right?
Not Stonehenge. No,
no.
It's Drenthe Stonehenge.
Not an easy toy.
Not an easy. No, so it certainly wasn't. It wasn't an easy toy to put in place. No.
No. In every possible way.
It's Friday, March the 22nd, and this is the Dutch News Podcast, your weekly chance to catch up with what's been going on here in the Netherlands. I'm Gordon Darrich, Dutch News contributing editor and royal non-photoshopper, and with me today is Paul Peters, civil engineer and self-declared candidate for Prime Minister.
Have you been photoshopping again, Gordon?
I have not been photoshopping, no. In fact, I'm one of the dwindling number of people who has not done any photoshopping in recent weeks. And I'm in very good company because I'm in the company of King Willem-Alexander.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yes, because he came up with quite a good line. He was on Walkabout this week and somebody said they'd seen a photograph of his family and he said, "Oh yes, but I didn't photoshop it," which is quite a nice contemporary reference that shows he's up to speed with what's going on Twitter.
Yes indeed, yeah. Very, very nice. Yeah, and I believe Princess Kate has been spotted the other week somewhere around Windsor, so she's back, so yeah, we can stop memeing. I think
we can stop all the conspiracy theories, yeah, and
indeed
find something else to do for entertainment.
Like the crewman of the HMS Prince of Wales, for example.
Yes.
I think it's the largest aircraft carrier of the British Armed Forces, and it visited the port of Rotterdam this week.
Yeah.
Unlike the Dutch Navy, they weren't able to access the river as far.
They weren't able to sort of make a swift raid up the estuary and claim a couple of nearby port towns.
Yeah. No.
And then drag a flagship back as a trophy.
The Royal Charles, yeah, which is where the Prince of Wales is named after, of course.
Yeah. So we saw the HMS Prince of Wales in Rotterdam, yeah. But I noticed we didn't see HMS Princess of Wales. What's going on there? Hasn't been seen for a long time. Is this some kind of distraction maneuver? I don't know. I'm very suspicious.
Maybe we should Photoshop a ship somewhere in Rotterdam. Yeah. Yeah, just to make just to be sure. No, but two or three crewmen of the HMS Prince of Wales have been going out in Rotterdam, and they probably thought they were in Amsterdam because they misbehaved very badly.
Yeah.
And the Dutch military police, the Koninklijke Marechaussee, had to come into action and arrest them and escort them back, I assume, to their ship.
Yeah. Did they make them fill in a really terrible online questionnaire about their visit before they came? They arrived. That's what they should have done. Then.
Yeah. I think this will be their punishment, right? You misbehaved, so you have to fill in this questionnaire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's, Brits being Brits in a city with damn as a suffix. So, yeah, it's just the way nature goes, I guess.
But in more exciting news, I read in the RD this week that you've put yourself forward as candidate for Prime Minister, right?
Yeah, just like basically everybody has done this week. I think we will discuss what has been going on in the formation saga soap opera later in the podcast. But the Algemeen Dagblad very confidently all of a sudden brought out even a push message to all their all the people who have the Algemeen Dagblad app on their phone, saying that none other than Hans Hogevorst had said that he is available to become prime minister if the new coalition takes over.
Yeah.
Who is Hans Hogevorst?
Yes, explain to the few listeners who don't know what Hans Hogevorst is, who he is.
He is, I think, a former health minister from at least 15 years ago, and I think a lot of people have forgotten about him, but he was quite prominent in the news back then because he led the reform of the Dutch healthcare system, I believe, and he was very often portrayed in sketch programs, so he had a very distinct way of speaking. So yeah, that made him, of course, an excellent target for this. So all of this, it was really a blast of the past for readers of the Algemeen Dagblad to hear his name pop up. But he immediately denied everything. He said, no, I'm absolutely not interested in the job. I don't know where the Algemeen Dagblad came up, how they come up with this.
It turns out he hadn't spoken to them at all. Right.
No, he said, no, I haven't even spoken to them. But then the Algemeen Dagblad said, because Elodie Verwij, she is the chief political reporter of the Algemeen Dagblad. She was on a talk show and she said, no, I spoke to him on the phone personally. He said this to me. But Hoge Force denied it categorically. So all of a sudden, the big question was, will Hans Hogevors become prime minister? Yeah. If you told me that this was a main question on social media.
An even bigger question, of course, was had Algemeen Dagblad actually spoken to Hans Hogevors? And it turned out, I think, that he'd recently changed his phone number.
She'd
rung an old number for him in her contacts book. And so whoever picked up the phone on the other end must have done a swift bit of thinking or something and declared that, yes, indeed, I, Hans Hogevors, would like to become prime minister. So.
Yeah, well, the Algemeen Dagblad, they aren't so sure anymore because they put out a rectification on their website. Very reluctantly, I have to say, so they said. Yeah. But and now Hans Hogevors demands an investigation. Perhaps someone used AI to reproduce his voice. Yeah. So they want to get to the bottom of this in order to, and maybe who knows what happened. And it was a delightful saga.
It was a wonderful afternoon, an excruciatingly embarrassing moment for the Algemeen Dagblad.
You would think of all newspapers, the Algemeen Dagblad, maybe because of recent articles they had put out, they thought, it's best not to record all of our conversations. So that might be the reason why they didn't do that.
So that was one rather entertaining little minor op-ed. But this week's op-ed of the week is even better. And
I think so, yeah. It is a recurring op-ed, I think, because I can't remember when, but I'm sure we discussed a similar op-ed on the podcast perhaps a couple of years ago. But this happens very often. And this time it comes from Krimpen aan de IJssel. Even though I have to say a group of 200 elderly is a bit large. I haven't seen a protest so large. Mm. And why were they protesting, you ask? Because, underneath their flat, underneath their apartment building, the municipality was planning to build a playground.
Horrors
of a playground, yeah. So the boomers of Krimpen aan de IJssel teamed up and they called, I think, the Algemeen Dagblad again. There it is. And they brought out a very large, very lengthy article stipulating and detailing their protest and why they don't want to have a playground at their doorstep. Because they say, at night it attracts drug dealers and all sorts of other criminals. It looks like a perfectly nice neighborhood, so I don't think they have to fear criminals there and drug dealers, especially because the elderly usually don't buy that much drugs.
Not those kinds of drugs anyway. Maybe Valiums and medicine for rheumatism, but
So that leaves out there's only one problem, and that is that they hate children and hate children having fun. One was quoted, "We bought the apartment because it's next to a park, but with a playground it won't be a park anymore." And that's a very interesting definition.
That's a new definition of a park that I've not come across before.
They also said, I loved one quote that is, "I will fight this playground till my death," which admittedly won't take that much.
It'll probably be quite a short campaign, and probably end with,
Indeed, and you can imagine that. Also, the accompanying photo of this article was brilliant. It was this group of 70, 80 year olds standing on this field of grass where the playground is planned, and it looks threatening, but also hilarious, I think. And someone photoshopped it into Band of Boomers, the HBO original series Band of Boomers,
like sort of true crime drama or something. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, it's a play on Band of Brothers.
His mobility scooter with his dark glasses on in the middle of March. That was.
Do you know who the guy in the front is with this enormous stack of papers underneath his arm?
I can't remember his name, but I know the significance of him because he was previously the secretary of the municipality of Kumpenanda, Iceland. I think that's where the council have miscalculated. The one person you don't want to cross is a guy who actually knows the bureaucracy inside out.
Yeah, and he said, I know the municipality, they already decided this, we can protest as much as we want, it's going to happen, and I will not I won't allow that, he said. So yeah, as you say, it's the one person you won't get crossed with. Twitter had an absolute field day with this. There were a lot of memes, a lot of jokes. There was also a lot of people who couldn't believe that boomers were basically spending their day fighting fun for children. Others also said that they probably should be happy if having a playground nearby is one of the biggest problems in your life.
Yeah, and you see the picture of the playground, it is really a playground, a children's playground for under nines with like a little model fire engine and some swings and some slides, you know, very tame stuff. Not even, you know, sometimes you have playgrounds with like some big 20-foot high chutes and things, but it's nothing that. It's a real, like a playground for tiny tots. And then
very
they say
modest,
they're worried about drug dealers coming on. It's all a bit, but as you say, the chief boomer, I think we have to call him, the former secretary, does cut quite a figure in the front of this photograph with his clipboard under his arm, inevitably, as befits somebody who used to work for the council. So you can imagine him going out, an army of boomers going out into this playground, all armed with clipboards and refusing to back down. It's going to be quite a showdown. This week, after a string of false starts, the four right-wing parties finally look set to start putting together a government. The Netherlands is a slightly less happy place to live unless you live near Schiphol, where the courts have recognised your right to a good night's sleep. The football team gear up for matches against Scotland and Germany. Emmen pull out of their sponsorship deal with the sex toy firm. And the Kokerhof celebrates its 75th anniversary in a blaze of colour.
I am, for once, very excited for the sports section of this podcast. And it doesn't happen too often.
Yeah, no, it's a very exciting, very stimulating sports section this week. It's March the 22nd, spring has sprung, and after a barren winter of frosty exchanges on social media, the talks to form a new government are finally bearing fruit. Last week, Geert Wilders gave up his ambition to become Prime Minister, either for the good of the country he loves, or because he'd been foiled by Pieter Omtzigt and his meddling kids. And this week, Kim Putters told Parliament that the four right-wing parties were ready to form an extra-parliamentary programme cabinet.
Whatever that is. Means, yeah. I love that two or three of the potential coalition partners basically said, we don't really care about how it's called, and you can name it whatever you want. We just want a cabinet. So they are not, even though the media and political analysts have been debating the meaning of a program cabinet for the better part of the week, and the three key players in all of this, three of the four key players, basically said, we don't know what it is, we don't care what it is, we just want to go forward.
Yeah, exactly. Especially Wilders quite nakedly stood up and said, I don't care what form the government is, as long as my party's in it. That's all he cares about. It's kind of, I think, a mechanism that's been devised to keep Pieter Omtzigt sweet. Basically, it's like the equivalent of a children's playground in Kumpenanda, Isle.
Just like the promise that none of the four party leaders will take up a position in the cabinet is a mechanism designed to keep Geert Wilders out of the torrentje.
So the four party leaders, as you say, will sit in parliament, and half of the cabinet posts supposedly will be taken by non-political appointees, possibly from other parties, although that's a bit of a sticking point. But otherwise, it looks very much like a regular majority cabinet with 88 seats shared between four parties. Wilders, as leader of the largest party, gets to choose a prime minister, and all four parties will be represented in cabinet, including the VVD and Pieter Omtzigt's NSC, even though they both said in earlier rounds of talks that they weren't prepared to form a government with the PVV.
Yeah, and the fact that they want political appointees from other parties is a bit difficult because a lot of opposition leaders already said that if someone from our party will take up the prime ministership or take a cabinet position, we will expel them from the party immediately.
Yeah, and, particularly GroenLinks, PvdA have...
But also D66 and CDA. I heard Henry Bontebal say something like that as well. This is Henry Bontebal got also a nasty surprise, I think, this week because
he did.
There were some new informateurs appointed this week, right?
Yes, Kim Putters has now concluded his work as informateur or sort of leader of negotiations for the second round, and there's now going to be another round of cabinet formation talks. But the great news is that this time they're actually going to talk about drawing up a programme for government. And it's only taken until 120 days after the election to get to the point where they actually start talking about what they're going to do in power.
Even though, in fairness, last formation, we saw a similar thing. It took the four parties, even longer than now, before they decided that they wanted to go forward with each other. But when they started the negotiations and they actually started talking policies, they were ready fairly soon, I have to say. So maybe this is a good sign.
Possibly, yeah. The last time you got to remember that they did explore other combinations first, whereas this time they've it's been the same four parties since the election. It's been the only realistic combination.
Yeah, and last time the four parties already got used of each other because they had been in the government for the past 4 years. But who are the new formateurs? Keep the tension.
I'm going to build the tension, yeah. The two new informateurs are both from the Christian right parties. Richard von Zwoll is a former chairman of the CDA's research bureau and now sits on the Council of State. And interestingly, his relevance, I think, is that he very recently was chair of a state commission that looked into the demographic impact of immigration until 2050, which is obviously a huge topic for the parties that are trying to form the government. Franz Foll's study concluded that immigration should be curbed because otherwise the population might grow to around 23 million. But he also didn't endorse the idea of shutting the borders and bringing immigration down to zero, which of course is what Geert Wilders wants to do. He said no controlled migration. Some migration was desirable because we have an aging population and a declining birth rate, so we need people to actually do the work when we all get too old to do it ourselves. And so he suggested that a population, we should aim to have around 20 million people, which is another 2 million in the next 25 years. Franz Foll is one of the informal and the other one is Albert Dijkgraaf, who is a professor of economics and was previously an MP for the Bible Belt party SGP until 2018. And as you said, these appointments were a surprise, in particular to the leaders of the two parties, who didn't know until literally the debate began on Wednesday morning, into Kim Putters' report that they'd been selected. And Henry Bontebal was particularly put out by this because he'd said the CDR did not want to cooperate with the Wilders government, and then all of a sudden he finds that an elder statesman from his party is taking a key role in the negotiations. And he raised this during the debate, and he said, "Does this mean that ministers is also going to be plucked from behind our backs from our parties if we've made clear that we don't support that?" I think there's a bit of discussion about that. Chris Stoffer, the leader of the SKP, he wasn't too bothered, but then again, firstly, he's much more, he doesn't object in general to this right-wing cabinet, and also he said that Albert Dijkgraaf wasn't really an active member of the party anymore anyway, so he wasn't really in touch with him.
He was, I saw that he was divorced and that he married former VVD minister Tamara van Ark.
Yes, former minister for health, Tamara van Ark.
So that was a bit of a surprise to me because, as a member of the Christian Orthodox Party, SGP, I wouldn't expect him to get divorced, to be honest.
So, yeah, well, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, they're clearly kind of moving into the 20th century, the SKP.
Finally, yes. So, yeah, a bit of political juice here.
Yeah. You touched on the point earlier that some of the parties had said that they would censure any members that joined a cabinet that was supported by the PFF. I think Frans Timmermans said quite straight out that he would expel anyone from the party, which obviously means that Kim Putters and Ronald Plasterk would then no longer be Labour Party members if they decided to take seats in this cabinet. Henry Bontebal took us. I think he said he didn't support. His party would not support any ministers who join the cabinet, but it's not actually within his remit as CDR leader to expel people from the party. Yeah. It's not quite straightforward for him, but he's made quite clear he would take a dim view of it, and he won't be amused. He won't be amused, no. And he attacked NSC and FFD for the fact that they watered down their objections to going into government with the PFF as well. In turn, Peter Omtzigt turned around and said that he wasn't really impressed with opposition parties drawing a red line and trying to erect a cordon sanitaire around a right-wing cabinet. And he said that they should play their part in running the country, and he would take their suggestions seriously, which is all very well. But the question is, will Geert Wilders take suggestions from Frans Timmermans seriously on how to run the country? Not much evidence of that so far. And Caroline van der Plas also said it was scandalous that parties were threatening members with expulsion.
Yeah, but Caroline was outraged a lot this week, right?
Well, in general, she seems to find a lot of things scandalous. It's become her favourite word, and it's a bit of a pattern. She's also scandalised that Frans Timmermans made a sort of, actually quite clumsy attempt at a joke during the debate when he described the PFF as Gru Wilders and his 36 minions. And this seemed to spark outrage among the kind of people who are always complaining that you can't say anything anymore because of the woke brigade, which I thought was...
yeah, and calling everyone snowflakes, yes. And this was, of course, a reference to the Despicable Me movies, right?
Yes, if you haven't got children under 10, that's what it is. But it's a height of disrespect, apparently, to compare a politician who has a criminal record for insulting Muslims with a lovable rogue from an animated children's film.
And the opposition leaders, they all asked the potential coalition party leaders one question, and that was, how is the chemistry between the four of you?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. How is the relationship? Well, Caroline van der Plas said they all had a very strong relationship. They were getting on very well, and she thought that they could come up with the cabinet before the summer, and she was looking forward to it. But I think the other party leaders, certainly Dylan Jeschlegers of the FFD and Peter Omtzigt, were a bit more cautious, especially Jeschlegers, who said that this was basically the last chance for the right-wing cabinet to actually come together. And she warned that if it didn't happen, it didn't work out this time, then the ball would pass to Frans Timmermans. And I sort of felt there was an understated an understated threat aimed at Wilders there, because Wilders has been saying that these are going to be very hard negotiations. He said he doesn't want to make any more concessions. He says he's made too many concessions already, and he says the time for giveaways has passed. And he made some small concessions. You know, he shelved a couple of laws that weren't good, had no chance of getting onto the statute book anyway.
And he also said he didn't want to be thrown out everything he has been fighting for the past 20 years in parliament. He even gave up the potential prime ministership. So I think he did make a lot of concessions.
After he'd been blocked by Peter Omtzigt and told that there's no chance he'll ever be prime minister.
As a PVV voter, I would scrap myself behind the back, wondering how it's possible that my Lord and Savior Geert Wilders is throwing away everything he was promising me so quickly overboard, and doesn't even get the jackpot of the prime ministership.
Yeah, but he's doing exactly what he did in 2010, which he doesn't actually care about anything in his manifesto as long as immigration numbers come down. That's all that matters. As long as he can keep shouting about Muslims and he can show some tangible evidence that fewer people are coming across the border, everything else can go by the wayside. And we saw that in 2010 when on the first, he spent the whole campaign saying that the pension age should not come down, not be raised above 65. And on day one of negotiations, he said, that's fine, we'll raise it to 67.
He was even asked if he thought that the Dutch government, his next government, should stick to the 3% rule, right? The 3%
on the budget deficit, the European Union rule. Yeah,
exactly. And he said, yes, in principle, I think so, which is also something, you know. His number one issue was always Islam and immigration, but his second, key issue always was the European Union. Now he says, yeah, I am respecting European law and European rules and legislation.
Amazing.
So yeah, very amazing indeed.
Yeah, but he has also said in tweets he doesn't want to see any budget cuts or higher taxes, and given that the budget deficit has jumped up because of inflation and the higher cost of borrowing, it's hard to square those things.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's going to be difficult. So yeah. But he has said that if they don't make gains in all the issues that matter to his voters, then there won't be an agreement. So there's a lot of kind of tit for tat, very low level threats and red lines being quietly drawn by the party leaders. And Omtzigt as well has said that he thinks these are going to be tough negotiations as well. So probably going to be. I don't think we're going to see a quick resolution here.
No, but how soon do you think we are likely to see any results, any progress?
Well, these two lead negotiators, who, by the way, I thought looked like the reincarnation of the two Ronnies, a British sketch show for people of a certain age from
I did
familiar
not
with
get
that
reference,
no,
but I saw some similarities between them and the picture of these two random guys that,
To do two very, very famous comedians, but from the UK from about 30 years ago. Anyway, so they've been given
how old are you again?
Yeah, no, let's not go there. they've been given 8 weeks to come up with a program for government. There's an 8-week deadline, but they said they'd rather get it done with sooner, perhaps even as early as a May recess, which is 5 weeks away, which is just in time for the King's birthday. The King's off to Emmen for his birthday. Maybe he'll be buying things from the football club shop to mark his visit.
And then claim that it's all photoshopped, what he is putting in his basket. Yeah.
Yes. Kim Putters said the idea was to come up with a framework for legislation. So, as we said, not a full coalition agreement, but a sort of an outline document. It's based on, and he's listed 10 headline topics that they should talk about. And as you can quite clearly, when you go through it, see that all of the parties have got their own hobby horses in the mix. There's immigration, which is Wilders. There's financial responsibility, which is Jeschelges. There's the constitution, which is Omtzigt. There's the agriculture for Funder Plus, and so it goes on.
And also quite important. Topics that you wouldn't really associate with these four parties, but for example, education was completely left out. I mean, it's 1/3 of the government's budget, right? Why not? Are they really not going to discuss this? That seems like a weird thing. But yeah, that's not as you say, one of the topics where the parties have their these ownership on. So yeah, it's in that regard, it's logical that it's left out.
Yeah, and again, like a defense and support for Ukraine are not mentioned either. Although, I mean, again, Jeschke said in the debate that the fact that it's not on the list doesn't mean they won't talk about it. But it's kind of a clue as to what, I think, what areas they think they can find agreement on and what things they're going to struggle on. Ukraine was particularly interesting because, of course, there was a debate in Parliament last week and the PFF didn't turn up. They literally have the biggest party, 37 MPs. It's one of the hot international issues at the moment, and they just didn't participate. The defence spokesman was ill, apparently, but they didn't find a stand-in out of 37 MPs or 36 million.
Which, to give a little bit of context, the ChristenUnie, which has 3 seats right now, they participate in more debates than the PVV does. And if they have a sick MP, which doesn't really happen that often, but if they do, then they just send in someone else because, they care about topics and they want to represent their voters as best as they can. So yeah, that's a bit of an attitude. And I have to say, I got, for the first time, I was community noted on Twitter because I fell for an article by the Volkskrant which claimed that the number 3 of the PVV hadn't appeared in Parliament since, when was it, December 6th, when the new Tweede Kamer was inaugurated. And I completely fell for that. I thought everything in that article was absolutely plausible. It was someone who is a poffertjesbakker, right? He's these mini pancakes, these Dutch mini pancakes, and this person was quoted as saying, "Yeah, bake even more things than poffertjes, so that that requires my attention." I completely fell for that, but it was a satirical article. I shared it, but yeah, it's I didn't notice the dispelled wording on top of the article. So mea culpa.
Yeah, so it's totally but totally plausible. That was your Alchemane Dagblad moment for the week.
Exactly. Yeah. I insisted it was a plausible article, yes.
Yeah.
Let's continue with the script.
Yes, yes. So Peter Omtzigt likes the idea of this extra parliamentary cabinet because he says that because they have a looser coalition agreement, that means MPs have got more opportunity to scrutinise legislation in detail because everything isn't nailed down in the coalition agreement. But of course, Omtzigt being Omtzigt also then went on to say, well, actually, we actually do need detailed agreements on all kinds of issues that we, we can't just let parties have their free run on the public spending, for example, because Feyfeyde and Feyfeyde have radically different ideas about how much to spend and how to spend it and where to get the money from. So we need to nail all that down in the agreement. So again, the more they talk
did he repeat that he wants detailed detailed agreements on the topics he cares about?
Possibly.
As he was quoted, that was what the report of Putter said, right? Peter Omtzigt wants these broad outline agreements except on the topics that he cares about, and that was widely quoted in the media, but he didn't repeat that in the debate.
No, but again, the more they talk about it, the more it starts to sound like it's going to be a majority cabinet with a coalition agreement like any other, effectively. Yeah. But we'll see. But Omtzigt said it's not going to be a single sheet of A4, so it's not going to just be a Feyfeyde manifesto length. It's going to be a bit longer than that.
So we know that Geert Wilders is not going to be prime minister. We know that Hans Hogevorst is not going to be prime minister. Who is it?
Who's going to take the job? It's a hot question. And again, there's a real shortage, I think, of serious contenders. Apparently, there's whisperings that the Feyfeyde keep mentioning the name Johan Remkes. But I think Johan Remkes is a lot less keen on the idea than most of the rest of Feyfeyde. Other names from the Feyfeyde, who, of course, are the only party that got extensive experience of being in government. They've mentioned Klaas Dijkhoff, but I think he seems to have left politics now and has seemed quite happy raising his family. Jan van Zanen, the mayor of The Hague, but again, he's of the older generation. He's had his clashes with Wilders as well, so that seems unlikely that Wilders would run to him. Fred Teven even has been mentioned, but I don't really see him coming in his battle bus to scoop into the Torrentia. Wilders really is going to look beyond the PVV because he has no candidates.
Fred Teven is an expert in besturen.
Yes, indeed.
But
yes, that's true.
Only buses and not necessarily cabinets.
Yeah. Again, because Kim Putters and Ronald Plasterk have been suggested, but Frans Timmermans has now said that that would be the end of their association with the PVV. And of course, the BBB are probably still dangling out hopes that they can somehow get Mona Keizer into the Torrentia. Because she's the only real candidate that they've put forward so far.
So we can speculate, I think, all we want until for the next 8 weeks or possibly 5 weeks. So it's going to be a guessing game, I think.
Yeah.
New legislation that will make it a crime to intimidate people sexually in public places will include social media, Justice Minister Dylan Jessugus said on Wednesday. There she is again. The law comes into effect on July 1st and will make it easier to prosecute rape cases by removing the need to prove the attacker used force. Additionally, rape will be removed from the statute of limitations, making it possible to prosecute cases no matter how long they took place. Approaching children online and having conversation of a sexual nature with them will also be made a crime. Some sentences are also being increased. The rape of a child under the age of 12 will carry a maximum jail term of 15 years. Jessugus said the new law is an improvement on the current legislation, which no longer covers what we as a society consider to be acceptable, adding that some 25,000 police officers and 250 prosecution department officials need to undergo special training before the law can properly come into effect.
So that's quite an undertaking, but at least that law did get passed, unlike another one that's been long in the works and came to an abrupt halt or came off the rails thanks to the non-intervention of the Feyfeyde.
Yeah, it did pass initially, a bill aimed to boost animal welfare on livestock farms, and it was even supposed to come into effect next year, but it was voted down by the Tweede Kamer on Tuesday. The bill stipulates that animals can no longer suffer pain or discomfort when kept in cages or barns, and it was drafted by Partij voor de Dieren leader Esther Ouwehand in 2021, and initially accepted by Parliament, even though former Agriculture Minister Carola Schouten was concerned that the law was too open for interpretation. Now, Agriculture Minister Pieter Adema torpedoed the bill earlier this month. He asked Parliament to water down the plans because it required too great an investment from the farming factory sector, he said. 99 out of 150 MPs voted to scrap the bill, and that included the PVV, but not entirely. One not so small but indomitable self-proclaimed knight held out against the animal haters, and that was none other than Dion Graus, the pro-animal rights MP. Esther Ouwehand said in response to the vote that animals had been thrown under a bus.
Well, it's not that bad, surely.
Well, it's better than being kept in the current cages they use in the bio industry. And she also said that she's not leaving it at this, so she will definitely do her best to reintroduce this bill, I think. An alternative proposal from D66 was accepted, and that alternative calls on the farm sector and the government to reach an agreement on animal welfare by July 2025. So another Boeren agreement, I think.
Yeah, but there's more positive news about another law that has something that was threatened to be abolished and now looks to have been given a last-minute reprieve.
Yeah, we are relieved.
We are ecstatic,
I have to say.
About this. Yeah.
I am ecstatic. Yeah, and I think Gordon, you too. Even though we have to miss it next month, apparently, and that is, of course, the air raid siren, the monthly air raid siren test, which I think last week or the week before that, we mentioned on the podcast that it was going to be abolished and that we were extremely sad about that. And that was another tradition that was being taken away from us. Mm. But the Tweede Kamer accepted a motion this week calling on Justice Minister Dylan Jessogus, there she is again, to reverse a decision to switch off the network of emergency sirens from 2026. Jessogus said that the sirens, which are tested on the first Monday of every month, had been made redundant by online warnings such as the NL Alert system, which doesn't seem to work, I have to say. And it was none other than Joost Eerdmans, that's the only part of this story I feel sorry about. It was Joost Eerdmans, the leader of right-wing party Ja 21. He tabled a motion calling on Jessogus to keep the siren switched on. He accepted that the deadline in his motion of the next monthly test on April 1st wasn't achievable, even though it is second Easter day, April 1st, right?
So, yeah, it is Monday, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think they would have tested it anyway. He did say that the minister should come up with a plan before the summer. Several safety boards who are responsible for the emergency services cover have also criticized the decision to abolish the alerts as irresponsible, and they argued that the sirens are necessary as a backup for the 8% of the population who are not covered theoretically by the NL alert system, even though I think at least 50% of all people are not covered by that system.
And certainly all of the people living in a block of flats in Kumpenander Eisel will not have NL alerts switched on to their mobile phones, right?
Exactly, yes.
The Dutch state failed to protect people living near Schiphol Airport from the effects of noise pollution, judges have ruled in a landmark case. Around 173,000 people in the area have suffered broken nights or other serious disruption from overhead planes, and that contravenes their rights under Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights, the District Court in The Hague has ruled. Judges said the state had consistently prioritised the growth of Schiphol and the airport's role as a transport hub over the interests of local residents. The court said the government must bring in new rules within a year, but didn't specify what they should be. Mark Harbers, the caretaker transport minister, has said he would study the ruling. The government has already said it wants to reduce the number of annual flights to just over 450,000, but it's been put under pressure, both at home and abroad, not to do that. The plans have to be approved by the European Commission, which says the government must weigh up the environmental and the economic impact, and the US Transport Ministry has threatened retaliatory measures if American airlines have their landing slots at Schiphol reduced.
Perhaps Schiphol should think about opening a nearby spillover airport.
Maybe there's like an underused airport near about 50 kilometers up the road that they could convert to a passenger airport. I'm sure it'd be no trouble at all.
If you want to know more about this, subscribe to our Patreon. We did a special episode on Lelystad Airport two weeks ago.
Yeah.
Some people obviously are happy with the ruling, I assume.
Yes. First of all, the action group of 5,000 local residents who brought the case, they're called Stichting Recht op Bescherming tegen Vliegtinder, they're the Organization for the Right for Protection Against Aviation Disturbance.
That sounds like a that's a title even the Soviets wouldn't come up with
of the name that you'd come up with if you'd spent your whole career as like secretary of Crimpen under ISIL Municipal Council, right? So it's your idea of a catchy title for a campaign group. They wanted the court to go further and enforce the World Health Organization standards on pollution, and that would have required the number of flights at Schiphol to be halved. But the court didn't go along with that request. But environmental organisations like Greenpeace and Nature and Bilieu, they were also pleased. They said it's good news for local residents and for nature and for the environment, and the government will now have to cut flights further than they are currently planning to.
I really enjoyed your Krimpen aan de IJssel Soviet apparatchi joke. And KLM has also fallen foul of the courts this week.
Yes, the flagship airline was found to have misled consumers with its claims and adverts about green measures like carbon offsetting. The idea that if you plant a tree, then it compensates for the fact that you've just flown in a jumbo in a passenger jet for 400 miles.
Notice the complete absence of gasps following this court ruling.
Yes, yeah. In a shock judgment, judges in Amsterdam said the adverts were vague and general because they had slogans like step by step towards a sustainable future, which sounds almost as convincing as we will put together a extra parliamentary program cabinet. They also exaggerated the environmental benefits of things like planting trees and using sustainable fuels. The case has been brought by environmental campaign group Fossilfrei NL and represents the first time a class action lawsuit has been brought in the EU against so-called greenwashing.
Yeah, KLM obviously has been humbled by these rulings.
No, not really. The National Airlines CEO Ben Smith went on the attack this week. And he attacked the politicians for kowtowing to demands to reduce the number of flights. He said it was bewildering that politicians were calling for fewer flights to Schiphol, pointing out that KLM has invested billions in a new fleet, and its long-term aims were based on growing the number of takeoffs and landings to 520,000 a year, even though there's been numerous court judgments and decisions by the cabinet that is not feasible or desirable. And Smith accused politicians of being spoilt and taking the success of Schiphol for granted, basically. So it was a classic bit of Schipholing, which is a concept that we were introduced to in our special episode on Lelystad Airport. He also said, basically claiming that Schiphol, the Dutch economy will collapse, basically, if Schiphol Airport doesn't exist, is sort of Schiphol's general take on things and justification for being allowed to grow unchecked. And Smith said in the Telegraph, gave an interview, and he said, you know what else is damaging? People losing their jobs because companies are disappearing. So, no sign of Schiphol backing down anytime soon. Here at the Dutch News Podcast, we absolutely do not exaggerate the impact of our patrons or take your contributions for granted, because every dollar or euro that you're able to spare is put to good use and helps to keep this podcast in the air so that we can keep you up to date with the coalition talks and everything else that's going on here in the Netherlands. And it means we can keep producing the bonus content, like our monthly special episodes, that are only available to Patreon subscribers. We have four tiers of membership to suit every budget. All new sponsors get a shout out to say thank you and the chance to ask us your questions, which we always enjoy answering. And as well as access to our bonus content, you get an extra chance to win in the much coveted OPEF of the Year awards, which I have to say are shaping up to be a really thrilling contest this year. Redicardia, a couple of really strong contenders.
It won't be Max Verstappen race where you know what winner will be whenever he starts, but I'm sure it will be a much closer race than your average Formula One race.
I think it'll be more twists and turns, definitely.
Yeah,
and, more manoeuvring. So if you'd like to join our ranks of podcast patrons and gain benefit from all those privileges, head on over to www.patreon.com/DutchNewsNL.
The Netherlands has dropped to sixth place on the list of happiest countries in the world, according to the World Happiness Report 2024. As for the past 7 years, Finland tops the UN-sponsored survey in which countries are ranked in terms of their population's self-reported well-being. Other factors such as GDP per capita, perceptions of corruption, generosity and freedom were also taken into account. Denmark, Iceland and Sweden follow Finland in the top places, with Israel in fifth. Where do you think Belgium is?
Yeah, well it says here, but I would have guessed that Belgium was probably outside the top 10.
And it definitely is. It's number 16, so we beat, at least we dropped a place, but at least we beat Belgium.
That's all that really matters, and Germany
that's all that
as well.
Matters.
I don't see Germany here at all. Yeah,
Germany is also not in the top 10, and of course we beat the UK. So get lost with your aircraft carriers.
Noticeably absence of gasps in the following this statement. Yeah, the UK is down to 20th happiest country in the world.
The top countries no longer include any of the largest countries, and in the top 10, only the Netherlands and Australia have populations over 15 million. The research found that happiness differs. Yeah, I think the most common factor here is you need to be a tiny northwestern European country.
Yeah. Or Australia.
Preferably a constitutional monarchy, and bonus points if you are a Scandinavian country.
Yeah. Most Americans think we are a Scandinavian country, so that's funny.
Right. That's right. The research, and it's confirmed by this list. The research found that happiness differs a lot between young and old. The Netherlands is one of the countries where the elderly are happier than the young, but that only is the case when they live far away enough from playgrounds. Dutch people over 60 are seventh happiest in the world, while Dutch under 30 are the ninth happiest in the world. So there's a bit of a discrepancy here.
Yeah, probably because Dutch people under 30 can't find anywhere to go, can't go outside to play in the playground, because they keep getting harassed by Dutch people over, by unhappy Dutch people over 60.
Boomers with clipboards, yeah.
Sports news now, and we start in Zeist, where the Dutch Football Association KNVB were all set to unveil Frank Pauw as their new chairman. However, there was a scheduling clash because someone had forgotten to check the diary and schedule the announcement for next Friday. Unfortunately, that date was already taken some time ago, actually 2,000 years to be precise, because it's also Good Friday. Jesus had double booked with Jesus, and that's a problem because the centre of Zeist has been closed off for a performance of The Passion. So that's now been the announcement.
What is The Passion, Gordon? Can you explain that?
The Passion is this play dramatization of the death of Jesus that seems to is performed up and down the country in the Netherlands at Easter time, and there's also a televised version as well.
Yeah, there's only one version, and that is the televised version. Yeah. And they sing it's basically a. They turned the Passion story into a musical, and they use the worst Dutch music has to offer to sing pop music songs that somehow, if you have a little bit of imagination, applies to the Passion story, and it includes. Yeah, all sorts of. There's always a big build-up of who is going to play Jesus in this televised version of The Passion, and they carry a huge cross through the city center. This case Zeist of all places. I don't really understand why they chose this place, but okay. But can you also explain who Frank Pauw is, because I don't think he has a history in football, right?
He has no history in football, no, and he's not an uncontroversial figure either for the KNVB to pick, because he's not. There's not much love between him and hardcore football fans. He's currently the chief of police in Amsterdam, and Ajax fans aren't fond of him. He's made some numerous statements about things like banning away fans from flashpoint fixtures like Ajax against Feyenoord, and of course Ajax fans themselves have not exactly been loved by the police in recent years, because they've tended to riot because of the poor performances of their team in matches against Feyenoord and PSV. So fans have unfurled banners at recent matches protesting against the appointment of Pau as chairman of the National Football Association. But his appointment has now been moved until the next meeting on May the 27th. He's due to start work on June the 1st, so that should still go ahead as planned.
Yeah, and if you just take a look at Ajax and see what happens if you appoint someone in a important position from outside football, that is just a recipe for disaster.
It certainly is,
right? Let's stay in Zeist for a moment. The Dutch national team is gearing up for a couple of friendly internationals.
Yep, they're playing the might of Scotland in Amsterdam on Friday evening, and then Germany in Frankfurt on Tuesday. And interestingly, those two countries, Scotland and Germany, are going to play each other at the start of Euro 2024. So these are all countries that have qualified for the summer tournament, having a few warm-up matches against each other. Barcelona's Frenkie de Jong is still not fit, but Ronald Koeman has said he still wants to play three central midfielders, because that's his preferred system. Probably Joey Veerman will be the most likely stand-in for de Jong. They've got some problems up front, because Brian Brobbey limped off Ajax's weekend match after pulling a hamstring. Stefan Bergwijn is also not fit. Meanwhile, Memphis Depay will be hoping to bag one or two of the six goals he needs to match Robin van Persie's national team record of 50. Depay was also the subject of a bit of op-ef at the press conference, because Koeman was questioned about his friendship with another former Ajax footballer who is who's fallen on hard times, mostly self-inflicted at hard times, and of course is Quincy Promes. Depay and Promes go way back. They're friends in their former playing days, and Depay has been standing up for him on social media, which Koeman said bluntly something he would not choose to do.
Yeah, and I think also Gregory Wijnaldum had a little bit of the same op-ef, right? Because he has been transferred to Saudi Arabia, yeah. And he was basically defending the whole regime and saying, the cliche stuff like, I've been there and I haven't seen anything wrong with the country. Of course, he, as a very wealthy person, he has been shielded off from everything that is bad from that country.
Yeah, he's kind of seeing through rose tinted glasses. And he also rather unwisely said that human rights are bad in Saudi Arabia, but what about the Tulslagen affair, which isn't quite comparable? So he of course a bit of a stir saying that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Let's talk about Ajax, the women's team. What have they been up to this week?
Yeah, the more successful Ajax team, they played in the Champions League quarterfinals for the first time. They were playing against Chelsea in front of a record crowd of nearly 36,000 in Amsterdam. And after home wins against Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich in the group stages, they were hoping to spring another upset against the English league leaders. But it wasn't to be. They were they admitted themselves were very much second best. It started brightly enough when Romelu Lukaku's shot came back off the post, but then Lauren James put Chelsea ahead in the 19th minute, and German midfielder Schuka Nisken added two more, and that makes the second leg at Stamford Bridge something of a formality. The team coach, Susanna Bakker, who of course is leaving at the end of the season, said she was very proud of the way her team had played, but they had been given a lesson in ruthlessness. She still insisted they would go all out to try and win the return match in London and make it a special night.
And then finally, this is the best news, or actually the worst news.
No, it's the worst news. Yeah, this is almost as bad podcast. As the sirens being switched off.
There is some anticlimactic news coming from Emma, from Drenthe again.
Yes, the Koken Company Eredivisie Club from Drenthe have ended their relationship with their headline sponsor, Easy Toys. Emin, of course, sparked OPEF 4 years ago when they announced the shirt sponsorship deal with the sex toy company. The KNVB felt that this wasn't an appropriate sponsor for a football club. They thought they should have gone with a gambling club, online gambling website, or some other kind of terrible addiction. In the end, they backed down when they discovered the meaning of the Streisand effect. Of course, this was incredibly good publicity for Emin, and if anything, they sold even more replica shirts than they otherwise would have done. But all good things must come to an end sometime, having put the cat among the Hunebedden, Easy Toys founder Erich Dietemar, who was born in Emin, said, "We've broken the taboos and established it is quite normal for a sports club and a company like ours to work together," he said. So, yeah, everybody scored. And
Very sad to see this shirt sponsor go. And how is FC Emin doing actually in the Keukenkampioen Divisie? Are they doing well?
They are doing okay, I think. Emin at the moment are... Oh no, there's some mid-table in the Keukenkampioen Divisie. Huh. They're sliding back down. They were doing reasonably well in the first half of the season. But now it looks like they're going to have to come with a hard burst to get back into the playoff positions.
Spring in the Netherlands has started in all its glory now that the Keukenhof has opened for the public on Thursday. The gardens at the Keukenhof are one of the biggest tourist attractions in the Netherlands, and it is celebrating its 75th Jubilee edition this year. 1.5 million visitors are expected to visit the 8-week display of blooming lilies, tulips, hyacinths, daffodils, crocuses, and all sorts of other types of flowers. There are in total some 7 million bulbs, supplied by 100 growers. They went into the ground in the gardens near Lisse last October for this year's spring show, which will run until May 12th. Visitors, of which 75% come from abroad, can wander along 15 kilometers of footpaths, which is larger than I expected, I have to say. and they can admire over 1,600 different kinds of flowers. Additionally, the Keukenhof showcases over 2,500 trees of 100 different species. There are also 100 types of cherry blossoms and a collection of around 10 artworks. So, a lot to see. The idea of the Keukenhof was born in 1949 when bulb growers and exporters came together to discuss a way to showcase their wares. And I have to say, it has been a bigger success than, for example, the Floriade. Is similar and comes on top of my mind now. The first show in 1950 was an immediate hit with 236,000 visitors, and they have seen increasing visitor numbers ever since.
Yeah, it's grown and grown, and it causes terrible traffic jams on the only a little regional road up past Lisse, and it gets clogged up with people going to see the bulb fields every spring.
Yeah, and they encourage people to use the special shuttle buses that run from Haarlem, from Schiphol, from Leiden, and I believe another place I'm forgetting about. Use that, and they run very regularly. So there's always a bus ready for you at these three train stations, or possibly four train stations. Yeah. Gordon, have you ever been to the Keukenhof?
I have not, but my parents have been with my children, so I'm the only one in my house who actually hasn't been up to see the bulb fields in bloom. So that's something I must put right. So have you ever been?
No. Maybe we should do...
Maybe we should go on a podcast special trip. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. What are you doing next Friday?
We're not podcasting because Good Friday. It's Jesus' day off, and I'm now no longer attending the announcement of Frank Powers head of the KNVB because that's been put off as well. So my diary's clear.
Well, let's go. The Keukenhof. I have never been there. It is one of these things I always, you also have the Zaanseschans, you have Giethoorn, you have Kinderdijk. Those are major tourist destinations, which I don't think Dutch people often go to, even though 25% of 1.5 million is quite a lot. But I think, I've never been there. I never even considered going there. So... I'm sure it's very pretty.
I'm sure it's absolutely glorious. As I say, it's funny how two of the biggest mass participation events are in one of the most inaccessible corners of the Netherlands as well, the Dutch Grand Prix and the Keukenhof flowers. So, maybe they should just relocate the whole thing to, you know, somewhere in Gelderland that everybody can get to easily. That's all we have for you this week. This podcast is a production of Dutch News, which can be found online at dutchnews.nl. We'll include links to everything we've talked about today in the liner notes on the website, and you can get in touch with us by email to podcast@dutchnews.nl. If you want to help us out, please consider subscribing to the podcast and maybe leaving us a rating. And you can also back us on Patreon at patreon.com/dutchnewsnl and earn yourself a shout out on the podcast and access to all our bonus content. My thanks to Paul Peters. I'm Gordon Darroch. There's no podcast next week because it's Good Friday, so we'll be back in 2 weeks' time on April the 5th. Mark Harbers, the caretaker transport ministry. Mark Harbers.
Is he named as the next Prime Minister?
Yeah, I think he's been... maybe Alkermann Duckbutt are going to phone him.